Hi, good afternoon. Michael Jones, alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 6th of 1986. I have a sponsor. His name is Bob Darrell. He knows he's my sponsor, not because I asked him a few years back to be sponsor me, but because of the actions I take. I am a sponsorable AA member, and my sponsor knows he sponsors me because I check in with him. He knows everything I'm pissed off about. He knows who I think is wrong and that deserves to, to get cooties or whatever it is that he knows all my stupid shit. Okay. And that's what a sponsor is for. Now I didn't pick the most famous AA speaker in, to be my sponsor because I wanted the status. I knew that he wasn't going to be impressed with my resume or how much time I had, and he was going to hold me accountable. And he is a better member of AA than I am. He's got 40, almost 47 years, and I have almost 40, and he's more active than I am. He's right now he's boarding a plane to Dallas to go speak at a conference. And he's and he's given his weekend to these folks in Texas just because that's what he was asked to do. Like I was asked to do this. I got off a little easy. I got 20 minutes. I don't have to spend the weekend, committing to this. But if you're new, I want to tell you that the guy telling the story is not the guy in the story anymore. All right. I grew up in South Texas, a bunch of from white trash, basically. I mean, I come from a long line of underachievers and deadbeat dads and ex-cons, and and lots of people in my family have died of alcoholism. And I was well on the way when I got sober. I got sober at 18 years old, and and I'll tell you just a little bit about the last couple times I last few minutes when I was out. So. On September 6th of 86, which is my sobriety date, I came out of a blackout in an alley in San Antonio, Texas, watching two police officers walk towards me with a puzzled look on their face. And if you ever come out of a blackout and you're kind of looking out and you're kind of trying to s figure the situation out before you say anything, because you don't really. I just got here, and what I realized is that I wasn't wearing any clothes, no clothes at all. I was butt naked, and I had my like I'd had my like my shin scuffed. I don't know what I ran through or whatever it is. And then the police report that day described my condition as naked and combative. Okay. I do not remember trying to fight these officers. What happened was they came upon me and they had questions, and I didn't have any answers for the questions they had. So I became argumentative. They had questions like, "How'd you get here?" And "What happened to your clothes?" Like these seem like unreasonable questions to me at that time. I was an 18-year-old legal scholar, so I was telling them about my rights, standing there naked, and explaining to them that they were oppressing me. And I really appreciate the job that cops do when they come across people like us. Like, because I can imagine, like, you clock in that day, you don't know you're gonna walk up to some crazy naked guy, out of his damn mind. And that's what I was. I was sitting there out of my mind. And I didn't know. And I wanted to say, "Look, guys, I just got here. Why are you asking me all these questions?" And I didn't have the wherewithal to say something cute. Like if I would have had, in hindsight, I would have said, "Hey, come on, it's laundry day. Leave me alone," or so I would have said something clever. But I just didn't have it in me that day. And that wasn't the first time I'd come out of a blackout in a jackpot. I had a week before that I had been kicked out of a brothel in Nuevo Laredo, a border town in Texas. And for vomiting on a prostitute. We were doing things that 18-year-olds do in border towns. We were drinking cheap tequila and eating those fresh oysters that they were talking about. They promised they're fresh. And a few hours later, came out of a, I snapped out. I was vomiting and peeing and crapping everywhere because I was suffering from a combination of food poisoning and alcohol poisoning at the same time. So all of this stuff was trying to get out of me every way it could. And I had my pants around my ankles. I had really disrespected this room. that's a very mild statement. And I'd apparently gone back there with a young lady who was now at the front desk complaining about a hostile work environment. I can only imagine, you know. And so and I never got a refund, you know. But anyway, so I've been thrown out of that. They escorted me out. I'm glad they didn't beat my ass because I would have beat my ass. So and a month before that, I'd woken up and it was one of those. I don't know how many of you have this experience, but I've woken up out of just it was like 7 a.m. I had some vomit, like gluing my eyelids shut. I don't know how that got there. And so I'm kind of like doing this with my eyes, you know, holding with my fingers, looking at the ceiling. And it was an unfamiliar environment. I did not know the ceiling. So I'm kind of like, okay, let me figure this shit out before I make any decisions, you know. And I was sitting, I was naked, I was under a sheet. It seems to be a pattern, doesn't it? I was naked under the sheet, and I'm trying to size up, and I'm looking over, and my friend was naked under the same sheet, and I was like, "Oh no, this can't be happening." I hope, please don't let it be whatever it seems like, and you know, and it didn't feel like, you know, you know, it looks like some of you know, and so and it, what turned out was my friend had thrown up all over us, and his mother was, we were sleeping it off, and his mother was doing all of our laundry. That's really what happened. Okay. So, but who knows what could have happened at the times that I don't remember. But so I think I've made a case for powerless over alcohol. Okay. I don't think anybody in here is listening to me and thinking he has a problem with alcohol. So, and when you get arrested naked and out of your damn mind, they don't just let you go. Like, you're leaving with them, okay? And I was arguing with these cops, and these guys didn't want to wrestle with me, okay? You know, these cops that had responded to the scene. So they called another unit, and they showed up with the canine, and they brought this huge German Shepherd out of this car. And I was just sitting there thinking, man, this could go so bad with me here naked. And so I decided to become cooperative, and you know, look, these guys were gentlemen about it, and it could have gone so much worse because, you know, I can only imagine the patience that gets tested with these cops, with dealing with knuckleheads day in and day out. And they took me to the station, and I had a moment of clarity in the back of that car, naked, covered with a police utility blanket, and I was just thinking, you know, I can't live like this. You know, and I didn't know there was a solution. I didn't know there was anything available. I didn't know I was an alcoholic, and I said an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. I didn't know any of that. Okay. All I knew was that I could not continue this way, and I was not interested in continuing this way. And I made this desperate prayer to God. I asked him, just please either fix me or finish me. You know, because if you can't fix me, just do me in. You know, because I'm not interested in finding out what's at the end of this road. And you know, Bill talks about that, how dark it is before the dawn, because that day was the first day of my sobriety for, you know, almost 40 years ago. An incredible journey is ensued. You know, so you know, I went to treatment, and they took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous Sunday morning. I went in on Friday. They took me to a meeting on Sunday. This is Club 12 in San Antonio, and I don't know what your first meeting of AA looked like. I looked around the room, and I was sizing these people up, and they were all well dressed. They were smiling and laughing with each other, and they smelled good. And I was sitting there in pajamas, from treatment center pajamas because my family had not brought clothes to the treatment center yet, so I didn't have any clothes. I was in pajamas at the meeting, and I was sizing this meeting up, and I was just thinking, you know, these people, man, these are the people. If there's a vote on membership, I ain't gonna make it. They're not gonna let me in here. Okay, can they let people like me in places like this? And then I heard this speaker. His name was Gene. Okay, I don't know why I remember his name all these years later, because I never seen Gene before, and I've never seen Gene since. Okay, but that day he provided a critical function to me. He went on and he shared his speaker. He shared that he had gotten drunk. He was doing a bunch of meth and drinking, mouthed off to the cops, got his ass kicked, got put in jail, and so I knew that this, and everybody was laughing at the stories he was telling. So I knew this guy was like me. Okay, he was exactly like me. And all the people laughing, I assumed they were something like me. Okay, all these people that were laughing at Gene. And then he said, well, I came to AA and I got a sponsor and I started doing some of this stuff. And then he said, well, I woke up this morning in the house that I own. I drove here in a car that's registered in my name. Okay, I had breakfast this morning with the family that likes me. Okay, and so what he told me that day was that he was like me. He had done some stuff like me, and he had come here and he had done some things, and then his life was remarkably better. Okay. And that I see, I didn't get here thinking, knowing I was an alcoholic. I knew I had serious problems. Okay. And I knew it had something to do with the drinking. I didn't know what I was in. I thought alcohol caused alcoholism. Okay. That would be the logical conclusion to someone who didn't know any better. Okay. But for people like us, for like me, and I presume like you, is that I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Okay. But I also have an abnormal reaction to sobriety. Okay. It's when I get sober when things get really bad. Okay. And we take my medicine away. See, alcohol doesn't cause alcoholism. Alcohol treats alcoholism. Okay. The problem with this medicine is that it has deadly side effects. And, you know, and worse, before it kills you, it's gonna hurt everybody you've ever cared about. Everybody ever knew you is gonna get hurt in the process. Okay. That's what alcoholism does to us. The book says to die an alcoholic death, or to live on a spiritual basis. These are not easy things for people like us. Okay. Think about that. You know what alcoholic death looks like? It's you decaying in a vacant apartment, you know, with an eviction notice on the door, but you passed away, but nobody cares. Nobody noticed because nobody likes you. You know, nobody would take a collect call from you. And back when they had collect calls. And you're sitting in there rotting, and the neighbors complain about the smell. That's how they found you, because nobody else cared. Okay, you'd used everybody up. And, you know, or to live on a spiritual basis. You know? So that's a coin. How did it become a coin toss for people like us? Okay, that rotting in that apartment, or living a spiritual way of life. It's a coin toss for people like us a lot of the time. A lot of people choose that anyway. They don't really know they're choosing it. They just think it's stupid. Okay. But here's the thing is that the reality is, if you're new, half the people you're ever going to meet in AA are going to die of alcoholism. Okay. That's the sad reality of what we do here. We have a fatal illness. Okay. But here's the good news. I've never seen anybody who did this who couldn't make it. Okay, I've never seen anybody do this who did this, who had a sponsor, was going to meetings, had jobs at those meetings, had I don't I have never known anybody who got drunk while doing that. Okay? And so it leaves it, you know, and the tragedy is that so many people choose not to do it. That's why more people die than don't. Okay? It's sad, okay? Because and we don't just die, okay? We piss everybody off first, okay? And we steal from everybody. We run up debts everywhere. We lie to everybody. We hurt all of these people in the process of doing our, you know, of ripping and running. And And what I've learned here, okay, I've had good sponsorship. I had a sponsor who went above and beyond, and he taught me very well about the 12-step of Alcoholics Anonymous, because by example, because Mel, this old redneck in San Antonio, he gave me rides to meetings. He bought me cheeseburgers. I was completely on my ass when I got here. And so I had like a pair of shorts, a pair of jeans, couple of shirts that, I mean, I didn't really have like, I wasn't a big fashion aficionado when I got here. And I was unemployable. I went through 11 jobs my first year sober, because I couldn't get my act together, I'd get in the job and I'm like, I'm so glad to be making some money. And, they were acted like they were nice. And then about 3 or 4 days in, I just realized that they were taken advantage of. I don't know why I thought that, but just people like us do that. You bring me here on a stretcher, half in critical condition, and like 2 weeks later, I'm bitching about the coffee, and a month later, I'm wondering when I get to be in charge, and this is the human ego is more resilient than our bodies are, okay, and that's what the problem a lot of us have is our egos are trying to kill us, and it's smart. My ego is smarter than I am. Okay. And worse, it speaks to me in my voice. Okay. It's been reading the book. Okay. It's right the same time I have. And so it's tricking me into thinking, this crop of losers in that meeting, man. You don't even go to some other meetings. These people aren't cool enough for you. These people are losing, whatever it is. Okay. Now, I was a high school dropout and unemployable, damn near homeless. I was homeless. It's just I had insurance, so I was in a treatment center. So they put me what was called, now it's called sober living. It was called a halfway house then. Now halfway house is a term reserved for like correctional stuff, but same thing. Okay. It was basically a bunch of newcomers in a house bitching it about being sober. All right. And I had the simple jobs when I got sober. I couldn't keep them just because, I had too many rights. I'd get there, I'd work a few days, I'd get a paycheck, then I just didn't want to go. I didn't want to, once they hand me a check, I didn't want to go back. And I'll tell you something. You flash forward 40 years, 30, 39 and a half. I should not say 40. It's assuming I'm going to get these next three few months, which I probably will, but is that I have a pair of bachelor's degrees. I have an MBA from a very good school on the East Coast. I've worked in great jobs. I've owned my own business several times. I've traveled the world. I've been to meetings in over 20 countries. It's because all of that stuff, the travel, the business, the success, those are things I do between meetings. I don't do meetings between those other things. I do meetings in AA. And I do all that stuff between time, AA, okay? Because AA is the most important part of my life. If I treat
2
AA
minutes,
like a
Michael.
gym, all right, buddy. If I treat AA like a gym membership, I'm gonna go when I feel like it. I'm gonna participate when my sponsees call me. I'm gonna, oh, man, just let go to voicemail, man. I don't wanna hear his bullshit today. And I'm assuming my sponsor wants to hear mine, I there are look, my life, people like me don't get to live the life I live. Okay, I am respectable. I am respected in AA and out. Okay, my neighbors respect me. My neighbors like me, and I'm the only gringo in my neighborhood. Okay. And so I'm the only guys, who I speak Spanish, but so I mean, but I am respected in my neighborhood because I act respectable, most of the time, and I have a cute dog. But, there's the spiritual aspect of this program. The thing that I can tell you is that the life that I have and the person I am could not have been built with the raw materials I brought you 39 years ago. If you took the big pile of crap that I brought you, you could not build me with that. So I had to have divine help. There's no, you can look at all my cousins and my uncles and my nephew. They're all like suffering from alcoholism. They're all in and out of jail. They can't see their kids because they won't pay child support. They and all of that. Okay. And I could, you know, and I could have missed it all. You know, I had good sponsors and I did what they told me to do, even when I knew they were wrong. Turned out they weren't wrong, but you know, I thought they were. So if you're new, get yourself a sponsor. You can't do this without a sponsor. I see that. I'll give about 5 seconds. I like that music though. But you can't do this without a sponsor. You need a guide. Okay. This book doesn't make any sense half the time if you don't have someone to explain it to you. So thank you for letting me share today, and I really hope you do this, guys. Thanks.